most casual and unthinking observer can find ample evidence to support the oft-repeated phrase, "This is the age of the machine." Every step in the progress of this latest achievement seems to add proof to the contention that man has put his faith in steel and oil, electricity and chemistry. Factories draw their metals from the complexity we call the smelter, which is fed by the machines that rob the earth of its ore. And in the cycle are the machines of transportation, full-throated locomotives, and the cargo ships that have in turn other machines to drain them of their burdens. And there are machines to carry us, machines to feed us, machines to clothe us, and machines to amuse us. Yes, this is said to be the age of the machines. But is it? Has this ingenious animal called man, for all his cleverness, managed to find independence from the creatures of the earth that he has mastered? Let's see. Let's take our laboratories, all our special and sundry knowledge of chemistry and electricity, and just for good measure, astronomy. All of them together cannot do for us what one of our most dependable servants accomplishes at least twice a day. I wonder where our vaunted machine age would be if such herds as these were suddenly to disappear from the broad fields of the world. Or if this solitary bossy, who comes close to being a member of the family, had never existed. No intricate complexity of test tubes and cylinders has yet been devised to yield the precious food that she gives. Nor does our cattle's contribution to mankind stop here. Beef, as we have come to realize, is far more necessary than automobiles. And even under the terrible pressure and urgency of war, animal leather has not been duplicated by man and his machine. Let's see what this lady, her uncles and her brothers and her sisters and her aunts, in fact, all the cattle in this country did for us last year. They gave us nearly 12 billion pounds of beef and beef products. They supplied us with more than 2 billion pounds of butter, almost 120 billion pounds of milk. For our shoes, 17,662,000 hides were tanned, and another 9,450,000 went into the handbags and innumerable suitcases, briefcases, and all the leather goods without which it would be very uncomfortable for man to work or play. And this intricate and deadly machine of war would have a bark no more ferocious than a puppy dog's if it were not for the glycerin that one day will come from the fat under this animal's sleek hide. These machine men never stop to think. But much of their equipment owes some of its excellence to our cattle. Yes, here are servants upon whom we depend greatly, but there are others equally necessary and equally dependable. Although the sheep has become a symbol of dumb acquiescence to whatever fate decrees, his master, man, would be hard put to resist the ravages of heat and cold were it not for the wool that is so unresistingly contributed. Last year, from this country and Australia and other sheep-raising countries, well over 4 billion pounds of wool were clipped for our soldiers and the civilians of the world. And who is that who so joyfully helps the herdsmen with the strays? We'll get to him a little later. To the credit of the sheep must be laid a whole machine world, peopled with thousands of workers and acres of looms. Indeed, between the wool and these machines was born the Industrial Revolution, that continued as we put more and more of our dependence in greater and more complicated machines. Suppose we take the average man just as he stands and see what he would look like if he were penalized by having everything about him which comes directly or indirectly from animals taken from him. First, his hat. It is made of felt, but is made of rabbit hair. No rabbits, no hat. It's almost time for lunch. Let's check with the wristwatch. But no horsehide or cowhide or pigskin, no wristwatch strap. And now, most embarrassing of all, that comfortable wool suit. No sheep, no wool. No wool, boot. And if he seeks to run away, he'll have to go barefooted, for animal leather enables him to have shoes. And that isn't all. We'll save him the embarrassment of pointing out that the cotton in his undergarment couldn't have been cultivated if it weren't for these hard-working plantation animals and animal fertilizer. But of course, we all could wear barrels. Here is another subject of this animal kingdom, perhaps the most optimistic of them all. For he doesn't despair that his master thinks him content under such conditions as these, when he would prefer clean, healthy surroundings. So let's see what this fellow and his good wife do for mankind in return for the mud and far too often improper food they get. We'll skip lightly over those succulent hams and savory sides of bacon, not to mention an uncountable variety of sausages. But I wonder what this young woman would do for bristles in her hairbrush if it were not for this young woman. And the string sections of our orchestras, there would be little warmth and color to our music without strings. In the same category, the surgeon would be unable to perform his miracles of modern surgery without his sutures. And who is this? This is no somber servant, but an eager and inquiring one. No matter in what direction his master may guide this youngster's life, it will be one of continuous effort to please. He may know only the monotony of the furrow, dull, hard work in the sun, often with too little water. He may grow up to feel the whip that drives him to endless effort on endless jobs. Or he may learn to know the tight expectancy at the barrier, the tension of the crowd, the heart-bursting effort of the stretched, the thunder of victory that too soon fades into the twilight of old age, perhaps an honorable retirement amidst the scenes of his youth. More often, a forlorn and lowly task. Yes, there are many paths this youngster may take in his life of service to his masters. In the cattle country, he is indispensable. He is much more than an economic necessity to his rider. Our machine age has almost eliminated the horse as a means of transportation. But you can't herd cattle with a jeep. Even our mechanized war, with its motorized equipment of all kinds, has not managed to eliminate the horse, who can die as gallantly and as horribly as any soldier, but never stops trying. The horse is probably one of the most versatile of the animals upon which we depend, but he has a companion that in the estimation of many has placed us even further in his debt, the dog. He has his place in war, both as a belligerent and as an agent of mercy. How closely he is interwoven into the affairs of man might best be illustrated by this fellow. Through the uncanny intelligence and the protection of the seeing eye dog, his blind master has found new opportunities for economic independence. In the far north, the husky and the malamute is a symbol of loyal, inexhaustible endurance. The army has enlisted him for war in the frozen climes, and since men came to these lands, their dependence on the sled dogs is historic. And that collie, rounding up the strays, he is an economic necessity. But he is no more necessary than this amiable brother who has forsaken a life of work for the duties of protector, companion, and friend. Then there is another species of domestic animal which discharges many duties in both our economic and social worlds. Much maligned by some for his backyard vocalizing, but a hunter highly prized by the warehouse men and all others who would suffer loss if our cats did not carry on such unceasing war against rats and other rodents. But economic dependence on animals is not all. They are equally as important to man's leisure. Whether it be in the field or simply when there is need for a quiet and unobtrusive companionship, which may not on occasion be quite so unobtrusive as it is enthusiastic. Nor is this companionship limited to the grown-ups and the adult idea of leisure. What small boy is a real small boy if he does not possess the devotion of an animal, be it a dog or cat, Shetland pony, or just goat? Even that complex machine, the airplane, does not afford so thrilling a ride as this equally complex but generally more docile means of transportation. There seems little room for argument. The animals we have worked into our civilization, they are necessary to that civilization, from both the economic and social points of view. We could no more do without them than we could do without our machines. But, and this is a very big but, because our animals and our machines have been completely accepted, they pay a heavy penalty. Neglect. Or call it carelessness, a trait, incidentally, that seems to have been left out of the animal kingdom. Whatever the name, both our economy and our society suffer immeasurably by this indifference. Let's take the classic example. Perhaps it's ignorance or simply greed that overloads this humble beast. Whatever the reason, this load will not reach its destination on time, if it ever does. The cruelty speaks for itself. Or another simple lesson in the humane economics of proper inspection of cattle cars. It was carelessness that did not eliminate this nail, this broken board.